mistakes were made.
Yes.
They all involve James.
Yeah.
That sounds correct.
They were several.
Like this podcast. Greetings, Apropos, and buckle up for the sex. It's the Apropos of Nothing podcast.
With your hosts,
Salsa,
James,
and Jenna.
Woo. And, Nelly, are we going to have a lot to talk about today?
Yeah. Buckle up, this is a 5-hour podcast.
Oh, yeah, this is...
If we keep it short.
Really.
Buckle up for the long, slow love-making.
Ooh, so, you know what? I love how you just turned that around.
Yeah.
Just flipped it over.
Yeah.
So, first of all, we need a drink.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a question. The ginger one or the creamy one?
Ginger.
Ooh.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll have the creamy one after the break.
Oh, all right.
Ooh. Ooh, delicious audio.
Ooh. Look at that.
So, what I am pouring right now is a moonshine cocktail.
Ooh.
Oh, all right.
Made in Scotland.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Will I be able to drive this week?
I mean, you're only getting a third of a can, so...
At least by tomorrow. Evening.
Yeah. So, anyway. Here you go. So... Beverage number one.
Bing.
Beverage number one.
Bing.
Delighted.
This is the ginger one. This is a moonshine mayhem. This was purchased by myself at a Highland Games
in
Airth, Scotland. This is their Cluty Moonshine and Ginger Ale cocktail.
Nice. It smells just like Gosling's ginger beer.
Oh.
Like exactly like it. Ooh. Ha. Oh, does not taste like Gosling's.
Wow.
Oh, that.
Oh. Mm. Huh. Ah.
Oh.
That is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. The finish on it is like. A ginger candy?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, like candied ginger.
Yeah, slightly like caramelized burnt ginger.
Exactly that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it's like it starts as a ginger beer, very quickly gives you just a little bit of that moonshiny kick.
Yep.
Mm.
And then mellows into that ginger candy.
Yeah, there's also kind of like a delicious like raisiny.
There is a raisin to it. Okay. Yeah. I can see where you're going.
Like
I'm not a huge raisin person, but yeah, it's there and it's not bad.
Yeah. This is wildly good. Well,
this is doing a lot for me.
We'll have to pick up some more the next time we're over.
Yeah, certainly.
Right. Why have you introduced this to me? I can never have it again.
Oh, there'll be more of that.
Oh, fuck.
Scotland!
Woo! I can finally talk. I was about to Scotland. Say, let's hear about Scotland and then
lay on Macduff.
Yeah, no shit.
That's not how the. Never mind.
Oh, I was real close to some of those places.
Yeah,
We were near Cawdor, and we were near Dunsinane and places like that.
Oh, did you visit my 1 square foot of land?
No, we did not, because I don't know where the fuck it is.
Well, you could have asked me.
I could have, but I didn't care.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You just didn't want to be on my premises, I see.
I actually, if I had known and, was able to find it, I would have gone.
What's sad is that I fought to say something and never did.
I wonder if the opportunity presented itself and I knew exactly, where to go, I 100%
would
have done
you guys
that.
Were mostly on the east side of Scotland, though, right? Because I think mine was west.
West. We were in the Inner Hebrides.
I just imagine that Salsa would have taken a long road trip across Scotland
to
show up at your one, what is it, 2 square feet?
No, just 1 square foot.
One square foot and a hedgehog. Fart loudly.
No. I would have absolutely been respectful to the lady of the land. I would have. In that situation, I absolutely would have.
Okay.
I would have given her all amounts of shit about it when I got back. But at that time, I would have absolutely been respectful.
He would have stood here and farted loudly.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. But while she's looking that up, Scotland. Where do I begin?
It's like a completely different country.
Yeah. So my wife landed there about a week before we did, and she spent a lot
of time.
That's
a much better plane.
It's over by Dal Na Trot, near Kiel. Bialach. Dror.
How do you spell that?
Which one?
Any of that.
Let's try K-E-I-L.
This is great. This is great.
This is a wonderful podcast.
Yeah, I'm glad we thought of this earlier.
Yeah. Okay,
that's
so...
That's a little...
On the tip of the penis.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, we did not get down to the penis.
Okay. I'm sure you're surprised that I'm on the tip of the penis,
yes.
But yeah.
Down in Campbelltown area.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we didn't get down that far.
All right.
They barely got to the shaft.
Yeah. anyway, so my wife got there about a week before we did. She spent a lot of her time in the south, in the Galloway and Dumfries area. Mm-hmm. And then... she went up to Edinburgh and met her sister, and they were together for a day or two in the Edinburgh area. And then...
Edinburgh.
Then,
I thought they knew each other.
God damn it, James.
What?
They met.
Fuck. All right.
Anyway. And then Scott and I met them in Edinburgh, and we landed real early in the morning, 7:30 in the morning or something like that, after being awake all day. So, yeah, like, we were already awake for almost 24 hours at this point. And so, like, that was a long day for us. But we got off the plane, and they were originally going to pick us up at the airport. And then they were like, or you could just take a train into city center.
Oh.
And then we can meet you there.
Oh.
And that way they didn't have to wake up so early. We're like, okay.
I mean,
that's not a problem.
That's win-win.
Not a problem. So that's what we did. We landed, we got on a train, and we met him in the city center. Except we didn't get quite to the city center because they were doing construction on the line. Mm. And so we had to stop like three stops before what we wanted to stop at.
Oh.
We had to walk a good like half hour, 40 minutes through Edinburgh to get to where we wanted to go.
At least you were well rested by this
point. With all our luggage.
I was about to say, it's luggage, isn't it? Yep.
Because Scott and I had the big luggage. You know, they had brought over just like their backpacks and their carry-ons for a couple days. We had the big luggage with everything.
Everybody's. Yeah.
So, we hauled that through Edinburgh. And that was fine, but it was just like, we're off to a grand start.
On the beach.
Yeah.
Cobblestones, those little wheels on the cobblestones.
Oh, like, we walked past Edinburgh Castle on our way to the hotel, which was not a terrible way to do things.
Honestly.
But then we met up with the twins. We dropped off our bags at the hotel. It was still morning, but we're like, we'll be staying here tonight. Could you watch our bags? And they're like, absolutely. Then we walked around Edinburgh. Now, a few years back, my sister-in-law Rachel had spent a summer in Edinburgh, and so like she knew the area. She'd been in Scotland before, and so like she was like, "Here is my old stomping grounds," you know. And so like Scott and I had like a sausage roll, and we were happy. And then we went up the Royal Mile, and we went up to Edinburgh Castle, and we did a tour of Edinburgh Castle, which was fantastic. And then we came back down the Royal Mile. And we stopped and we ate some food, and it was really great. And we
had more sausage rolls.
Yes. We had some haggis. It was delicious. And then the buskers started coming out on the Royal Mile.
And he brought one particular suitcase that couldn't be a carry-on, and he was like, let me show you.
Genuinely, there was this one busker that I saw who... was a fucking master. Like, Jesus Christ. I was watching this guy with my mouth open, because this man was literally, like, managing his crowd like a conductor managing an orchestra.
Ooh.
Like, it was a thing of beauty. Like, he literally was just doing it with hand gestures. He was able to control his crowd. Mm-hmm. And it was so beautiful. Like, I wanted to watch that guy forever. But I wasn't allowed to.
Yeah, the gesture.
On my way out there, before I left, a friend of ours who has been on this podcast before, Dan Kajewski with Spirited Endeavors.
Yeah.
We was at his house, and he was like, "Oh, you're going to be in Scotland soon. What you want to do is you want to go to Victoria Street, and you want to go to the whiskey shop, and you want to ask for Duncan."
Yes.
Perfect.
And I was like, okay, I will do that. And so we get there, and I go to Victoria Street, and I go to the whiskey shop, and I ask for Duncan. And sure enough, he was there.
He's like, yes.
Dan sent you.
No, I was like, an American named Dan sent me here. And he was like, okay. And I was like, he's a little gnome of a man with wispy hair. And he went, oh, that guy.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, and then they sold me a bunch of scotch. It was brilliant.
Even better. I know, right?
Fantastic. Oh. That is the best little side quest.
It was fantastic.
Now I kind of hope that all of his stories end that way. Yeah, we saw this castle. There was a dragon. And then they sold us a bunch of whiskey.
Oh, that is a lot of stories are going to end. Actually,
somehow
excellent.
They were gearing up for Fringe in Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
So I got some amazing shows out there. The Shitface Shakespeare version of Hamlet was like, I would love to go see that. But I mean, like, we saw The Last Drop Inn, which was a like pub that is near the square where people were executed.
Oh
sure.
And wow. So it's like, it's called The Last Drop because it was both the place where they got their last drop of alcohol and where they got
the final drop.
I get it. Wordplay. Yep.
So this
used to hang people for that.
This is on is on the Royal Mile.
Huh.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh.
I have a picture of a doorway that leads to James's Court. I know, right? It's a lovely little courtyard. I took some pictures. I'll show you later. And then we went to the Poet Museum in Edinburgh, the Writers Museum, which is a museum of Robert Burns, Sir Walter Scott, and Robert Louis Stevenson.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which was lovely. Got to see that. We went to the Scott Monument.
Okay.
The Scott Monument in Edinburgh, by the way, is fucking huge. Like, it is. You look at it and you're like, oh, that's big. And you're like, no. It's fucking huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a monument that has, like, staircases inside of it.
Oh.
You go up
like
into
Statue of Liberty?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like it is real big. So then we got to Edinburgh Castle, like I said. We toured Edinburgh Castle. We got to see them fire the cannon, the ceremony at 1 o'clock where they fire the cannon.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. Got to see all sorts of stuff. And then we climbed Arthur's Seat.
Okay.
Which was great.
First.
When I say we climbed Arthur's Seat, I mean me and Rachel and Scott climbed Arthur's Seat. Rayleigh took one look at it and went, fuck no, I'm going to read down here.
I mean, honestly, yeah.
Which was the right choice for her, because when we got the three of us, we did get it. We climbed all the way to the top of Arthur's Seat, and my God, was that a... but we did it. We made it. And then on the way back down, we passed a motherfucker running up the hill. It's just like, some people need different hobbies. Just before we climbed Arthur's Seat, we stopped to build our courage. And so, James, if you would reach down there and grab me that bottle that is closest to you.
Okay.
Yep.
In between the white and the green?
Yep.
That one.
So, right. This Ooh. Is a scotch from Holyrood Distillery.
Oh.
And this is from their Noir series.
Ooh.
Okay. So, I found out about Holyrood from Dan Kajowski.
Sure.
Big yeah. surprise there. This is the first new distillery in Edinburgh in over 100 years.
Oh.
So this is a pretty new thing. And when he was there, like, last year, he got to drink, like, barrel number 23. They're very, very new.
Right. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, when were they? Because we drank this, and we were like, that's fucking delicious. What is this? And he's like, that's the thing. It was so new, hadn't been named yet.
Okay.
So we're like, okay, so we'll have to just find out when we get there what it is we're drinking. And we get there, and we find out... That was a big pour for myself, but I will give you smaller ones.
I mean, I'll take a big pour. I'm not driving.
She's not.
But we found out that Holyrood is doing something a little different.
Thank you, kindly.
Instead of having a flagship scotch, they are doing experimental batches.
Ooh.
And so, like, they don't have the same thing that we had, which was okay. This, the Noir series... were aged in three different barrels.
Is one of them sherry?
One of them is Burgundy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Bordeaux.
Okay.
And one of them is Champagne.
Yeah. Okay.
This one is the Burgundy.
All right.
I also have a small bottle of the Bordeaux, but that one's mine. but this
gotta
is
have his own hobbies. Yeah. Yeah.
But this is delightful.
Oh, it smells incredible.
It really does.
It does. Oh, okay. Some lawn chairs.
Mm. Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh. Oh, my God. That is smoother than a 40s gigolo.
Yeah, it's velvet on the tongue. It's
wow.
And it just evaporates out of your mouth.
Yeah.
You barely drink it.
I was greeted and kissed before it slapped me. I love that. That's lovely. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So that's one you won't be able to find around here.
Oh, good.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I'm just going to... I'll be over here. I'll be in my bunk.
Okay. I'm just going to curl up around this like a dragon.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that was day one. Then we went back to the hotel, and it was a great time. The next day, we drove to Falkirk, saw the Kelpies at Falkirk, and then we went to the Erth Highland Games. Erth Highland Games were delightful. That's where I got the moonshine. We got to see the dancing. We got to listen to the bagpipes. We got to see the caber toss and the shot put and all that other stuff. Yeah. It was an absolute delight. And then we went to Stirling. Now, our tickets to get into Stirling were at like 4 in the afternoon. We were a little early. So we went to Deanston.
Mm-hmm.
James, a bottle of... Okay, no, I won't wait.
Are you kidding me? Especially after this last one? I will get anything from anywhere in your house.
I think we should probably hold off on some of these. Or you'll die before you leave.
I might.
But we went to Deanston.
But what a way to go.
And Deanston, I know, right?
Oh, I bought so much scotch at Deanston. literally. Mm. And the guy who was giving us tastings was really generous with his pours. And also, Raiderly, as the driver, got homework. was like a 100-mil bottle of scotch. And every time we were tasting something, and then she was the driver, so he... poured a little bottle and he was like, there's your homework.
that's so good. Sweet.
I know, right?
That way
you're safe, but she could still try them.
Did she have a cram session later?
No, once we got home, actually. We brought all those all the way home.
All right.
Deanston, we had some scotches that were way too expensive for any of us to purchase. There was a couple there that he was like, we really recommend this one, and we drank it. We were like, yes, 100%. This is amazing. How much is that bottle? It's like £200.
What do you have on the 50-ish range?
Exactly. Yeah, we'd like to buy four of the 50s instead.
Yeah.
I did one of the bottles. I did buy a little 200 mil bottle of it because it was real good. Yeah. It was their Chronicle series. And what they had done is they had taken six scotches from the last six decades. So a 10-year-old, 20-year-old, 30-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old, 60-year-old, and blended them together to create this one scotch. And it was so complex and so delicious. Mm-hmm. Holy shit, that I was like, I have to bring home a little bit of this, but I can't bring home much.
Yeah.
Scott and Rachel did buy that. It was the most expensive bottle of scotch they bought on the entire trip.
Yeah,
but it was that good. But then we went to Stirling Castle. And Stirling Castle was an absolute delight.
They walked in like they owned the place.
Kind of. But yeah, we absolutely loved Stirling Castle. We got to see the unicorn tapestry and everything like that that's at Stirling.
Yes.
All sorts of stuff. Then we
made
drove,
a real unicorn.
Then we drove over to Loch Lomond, and that's where we spent the night.
Ooh.
In the Loch Lomond area, I know. It was at Stirling that I bought some gifts.
I like presents.
I know. I bought each of you.
Are they boozy presents?
A bottle of scotch.
Oh,
what?
Oh, for real?
What? I bet they're tiny bottles. They're probably tiny bottles.
They probably are.
Oh my god!
Oh, they're so cute.
They are tiny bottles. They're the tiniest of bottles.
Ooh. There you go.
Oh my god!
And there you go.
Oh,
it's
yay.
So cute.
I bought you all bottles of scotch.
Oh my god!
There.
That's amazing.
Dear listeners, this bottle is about an inch and a half tall.
Yeah.
But it is a fully, it is to scale, and it has whiskey in it, but it is about an inch and a half tall.
Adorable.
So.
It's so cute and so amazing.
I'm happy because it's booze. James is happy because it's tiny as fuck. Well done,
yep.
Sir.
No, I knew
this is. I have a little tiny chair in front of my extremely small TV set, and this is going right next to it.
Yes. my God.
I have to get a very small table that I can put this on with tiny rocks glasses.
Oh, speaking of, it was at the Loch Lomond bed and breakfast that I got another present for James.
Aww.
I got you a jar of jam.
Oh. Whoa.
It's also about an inch tall.
It is.
Yeah,
it's very small.
That is very
it is
tiny.
A single serving of jam. And it is black currant, which, again, you also can't get in this country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was tiny, and I was like, James would love this.
Yes, I do.
Anyway, next day we drove. We left Loch Lomond, and we went north to Glencoe.
Oh, sure.
I know, right?
Yes.
Glencoe. Holy fuck, is that beautiful.
Different from Minnesota Glencoe, then.
So different.
Yeah.
So different.
Somewhat.
Glencoe is stunning scenery. We entered it from the east, heading west, and there's this moor, and it's just this bogs and, mist everywhere. And then you just enter this valley as the sides just rise up out of the mist, and suddenly you're in this glen, and it is stunningly beautiful.
And it disappears
for 100 years.
For 100 years.
That's Brigadoon, not Glencoe.
Oh, sorry.
it was stunningly beautiful, like I said. I can't get over how much that was. But we left Glencoe. We stopped in at the place there, and we learned a little bit about the history of the Glencoe massacre and some other stuff like that.
Sure.
And it is where I got the second present.
Ooh.
I got it. Each of us, we're going to need these tonight, some coasters.
Oh.
Here you go.
Ooh.
Oh my god,
it's
yay!
So cute.
This is a coaster. It is a wood cutout of a Heelan coup, and the background is a tartan.
Yeah.
Looks like the Anderson one.
I don't know what it is. So
it looks like the Anderson tartan.
I believe you. But anyway, I hope that is not going to be awful for you. But anyway, those are wonderful. Those are yours.
Thank you.
What a delight.
Yeah. I can put my tiny bottle of booze almost inside it.
I am flying through this, by the way.
Yeah.
So then we went, we landed, and we went to the Isle of Mull. Mm-hmm. And the Isle of Mull was absolutely a delight. The ferry that we took over had a wonderfully painted pipe. That we absolutely
they
had taken a pipe and painted it like a mushroom, and it looked like a Mario thing, and it was a delight. Mm-hmm. But on Mull, we spent the night, and then in the morning we drove across the length of Mull on a one track road. We literally, a lot of the roads once you got out of like the major areas were just one lane roads that every couple hundred yards would have just a wide spot, and whoever got there first pulled over and let the other person pass. Once you got the feel of it, it was okay. But for the first while, you were just like, "This is a terrible way of doing
this."
But it was fine. But we drove across Mull to the Isle of Iona.
Oh yeah,
where many of you probably are aware of is where the abbey where the Book of Kells was originally created before it was transported to Ireland for safety. Beautiful. The abbey at Lindisfarne at Iona. Lindisfarne's on the other side. The abbey at Iona was really cool. We hiked around the island a little bit. It's not a very big island, so you know we spent an hour walking around. We basically could have navigated the whole island, but they've got right to roam in the UK, so you can just walk across fields and stuff like that.
Have to maintain styles and things.
So we toured the abbey, and while we were touring the abbey, they brought our attention to one of the altars in there had been made with this beautiful marble. And they were talking about Iona marble. Iona marble is famous because it is this beautiful creamy white marble with flecks of this green serpentine in it.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous. And he's like, Iona marble, so the story goes, is a protective charm. And it protects you against burning to death. Or drowning. And I was like, I'm a fire performer. That sounds fantastic.
Right.
That is fantastic.
So I was like, I would like some of that Iona marble, please. And so, sure enough, I went to the gift shop afterwards, and there it was. It was a little chunk of Iona marble. So I have my little my little piece of Iona marble. Because nothing says preventing drowning like tying a rock around your neck.
Right.
it was funny because
makes for very strong swimmers.
My brother-in-law Scott had the same idea, and he also bought it.
Well,
so we were like, cool, and we rode on a bunch of ferries for the rest of the trip, and I'm still here, so it's doing its job.
There we go.
But this will be part of my fest costume from now on.
You didn't make any bargains with them, did you?
No. This will keep me from immolating myself. So that's now a tax write off.
Nice. I'd do it.
Yeah, see if you can get a little knocked off your insurance.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, so it was at that point that, by the way, Scott and I fucked off and left the ladies to their own devices because Scott and I boarded a boat and took it up to Staffa. Staffa is about 6 miles north of Iona. It is the quote-unquote other end of the Giant's Causeway. It is a basalt island. Not very big, but it is those hexagonal pillars.
Yeah.
And on Staffa is Fingal's Cave, the so named giant of the Giant's Causeway. And Fingal's Cave is this, exactly what it sounds like, cave in this basalt layer. and the waves crash into it and are just beautiful. And Fingal's Cave is gorgeous. And Mendelssohn, when he visited Staffa, was so moved by the sound here that he wrote the, which is the Caledonian Symphony or something. This is great radio.
This exceeds my pretty medium classical knowledge.
The Hebrides Overture. That's what it was. Mendelssohn visited Staffa, and then he composed the Hebrides Overture based on
very that. Different from the William Tell Overture.
Staffa is famous for being this basalt column. You know, Fingal's Cave is the big thing. The other thing that Staffa is known for is the puffins.
Aw.
Puffins.
Now, when my wife and I were in...
Roost, yeah. Puffin.
When my wife and I were in Ireland, we got to see puffins as well. And so it was like, awesome, you know, we'll see some puffins. It'll be nice. And we had an hour on the island. It was about a 45-minute boat trip to the island. We had an hour on the island and then a 45-minute boat trip back.
Oh, no. Delightful.
I know. It was terrible. So we're on this island. So we go and see the cave, and that takes about 15 minutes.
Sure.
To walk to the cave, be in there for a little bit, and then walk out. We're like, we got another 45 minutes. So we're going to go to the north side of the island and see the puffins. We're like, awesome. Yeah, we're going to walk over there. Walk. And then the person on the boat's like, you might not. We're near the end of puffin season, so a lot of them have left.
Yeah.
I mean, setting expectations, you know.
Right.
Sure.
So they you might not see many. If you do go there, you get to the spot. They were like, well, you go over there, and there's going to be this pink flag in the ground. When you get to the pink flag, that's where you want to be. And if there's no puffins there, just no wait puffins. A bit.
Oh.
Because they will. They might be out to sea, and they might come in. And, and puffins actually like people. Because people scare away predators.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
And so they're like, you just stay there for a little bit. And then, you know, if there's any puffins out to sea, they might come in. So, but you might need to wait 15 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So we walk. And then we come over a rise, and we see fucking thousands of puffins.
Oh, my God.
Well, there you go.
And I mean, holy shit, puffins. And they were like 4 feet away from me.
Oh, my God.
Like, they were just... there
just being chill little guys
just doing, and you know, they're coming and going and just doing their puffin thing and ignoring you, and the path is, like I said, about 3 feet away from the cliff edge.
Is this anywhere near the island that they used in Star Wars that they had to...
No, that is Ireland, and I was near that island. That island is on the
so like St. Michael's something.
Yeah, that's on the west coast of Ireland. Can't remember the name of it, right? Skellig Michael. And I saw that one from where I was. I could see, like, that's Skellig Michael right there. I didn't go to Skellig Michael, but I saw it. This is Staffa is different, but
different, yeah.
So many puffins. And they were, like I said, just fucking right there.
Ankle deep and puffin.
Pretty much. Yeah. It was a delight. And then we got back on the boat and we came home. And Scott and I were fucking happy as clams. It was so fun. And again, we made it. So good job, Stones.
Yeah. Hey.
But then that was our day. We saw Iona and Staffa, and it was beautiful. And then we had more booze. And the next day we went to the Isle of Skye. Isle of Skye, beautiful for different reasons, obviously. Isle of Skye, when we got there, it was pouring rain. Absolutely fucking belting down, and that didn't stop us at all. We went fucking hiking cross country. We saw some amazing waterfalls
on
this hike that were absolutely torrential because it was raining.
Just coming off the trees, honestly.
I was going to ask if you went trees? Chasing waterfalls.
I'm sorry. Trees? What trees?
Fair.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah, it was more is what this was. Mm-hmm. And so, like, more of what? Yeah. So we go beautiful waterfalls just soaking wet. And then like Scott or my wife and her sister and I, we went back to the hotel, and Scott was like, "I'm going to smoke my pipe and keep going upstream to some more waterfalls up there.
Huh.
And so he did, you know, and he went off tramping across the moors, puffing his pipe as happy as a fucking clam.
Yeah, this is very Scott.
This
thing.
Is oh, this yeah, is the most Scott
I have
thing.
This visual entirely.
Oh, yeah. It is 100% accurate.
delighted. Sweater? Big sweater?
We all bought wool sweaters, of course.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But yeah, with his Scott hat on, and he was hat, just yep. so fucking happy as a clam.
Brilliant.
And although we were just like, again, the very Scott thing to do. We were, you know, he got back and we were like, yeah, we were joking about the fact that, you know, in that rain, you know, he would be walking across the moor smoking his pipe if he could get his matches lit. And he was like, oh, no, I found a rock that I hid behind and here's a picture of the rock. This is the rock that gave me the ability to light my pipe.
Yes.
But yeah, he tramped all the way up the ridge, and he said it was at that point that he like looked at his phone, and he realized he was like 3/4 of the way across the island already.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, right. The scale of this place is not American. it is very much. The last day we drove from Inverness to Edinburgh to catch our flight home, and that's a 3-hour drive. Like,
A three hour drive.
But okay. Yeah, so then we get to.
You only needed the one, James. Yeah,
I'm going to drink some more of this.
Sometimes I just want to give a little more. It's
a more?
More of what?
I hate you.
So at this point, we go back to the hotel and we have a lovely time. Sky mm-hmm. was beautiful. Next day, we go from Sky mm-hmm. and on our way to Inverness, yeah, we stopped at my ancestral lands.
Oh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my great 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 grandfather was Alexander Cameron. So I am Clan Cameron.
God damn it.
I don't know what just happened there. Oh, I see. I get it now. I hear it now. He was a Scotsman too. Anyway, I am a Cameron. And so I got to visit the Cameron Family Museum.
Nice.
Oh, wonderful.
The Cameron Clan Museum. In Achnacarry, and which is just at the southern tip of Loch Ness. And Ben Nevis, the tallest mountain in mm-hmm. in the UK, is in traditional Cameron lands,
yeah.
Just north of Glencoe. So that Lochaber area, that was Cameron lands. And Cameron learned a lot about the Camerons. The Camerons were instrumental to Culloden.
Okay.
Cameron of Lochiel, the clan chief of Cameron, that mm-hmm. convinced Bonnie Prince Charlie to have that Jacobite uprising, that final uprising, and Bonnie Prince Charlie like stayed on Cameron lands while he was gathering his army. And it was after Culloden that the Camerons were effectively wiped from Scotland. Because of their support for Bonnie Prince Charlie.
Yeah.
All right. The ancestral lands were burnt and all the Camerons had to flee. And it wasn't until the amnesty, like 50 years later or whatever, that Camerons were allowed to come back. And so, yeah, it was pretty cool. And then also found out that the last kilt worn as part of a military uniform in combat was a Cameron.
Oh,
neat!
At Dunkirk, as they were evacuating Dunkirk, the Cameron Highlanders were one of the last rear guard units protecting them as they left.
Oh wow!
And I got to see one of the last kilts worn in combat. Which is pretty fucking cool.
That is very nice. Cool.
Yeah, it was very, very moving. So that was pretty neat. I learned a lot about my background. I bought this lovely hoodie.
It is a lovely hoodie.
And then we headed north to Inverness. We stayed then at Culloden. Mm-hmm. Okay. At a place called Culloden House. A fucking castle.
Oh. Appropriate.
Yeah. Mm. A fucking castle called Culloden House. Mm-hmm. It is at the site of where Bonnie Prince Charlie's headquarters were before Culloden.
Ah.
And it is fucking gorgeous. Jesus fucking Christ, was this place gorgeous. Giant fucking, like, it's a literal fucking castle. We pull up and we go inside, and they don't have a desk. They brought us into the reception room where we sat down in plush chairs.
Ooh.
As they checked us in and asked us, you know, about breakfast and things like that. And then she said, would you like some champagne? And we said, why, yes. Yeah. And so popped a bottle of champagne sitting in the corner and gave us all champagne.
Fantastic.
I know. And then, yep. Okay. No. Huh? Turn it sideways so I can see it bigger. Oh, that's not helpful. Anyway. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
Whole Nelly. But it was real fucking fancy, and
that's what I'm hearing.
So then we sat and we had our champagne while we got the tour, which was pleasant. And they were like, "Here you go. Here is here's the lounge, and here is the dining room
that
you will be eating at."
Oh,
and and then over here is the bar, fully stocked with scotch. That's open 24 hours a day.
Lovely.
Yep.
And then the rest of their vacation was set aside.
Kind of. I did get.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, I did. So we
absolutely amazing.
So we then were shown to where we were staying, and we were not staying in the castle.
Oh,
we stayed in the garden house.
Ooh.
I was gonna make a joke about the shed at the bottom of the garden, but yes, I presume that it is equally well appointed.
Hold on.
Sure. Like a tortoise.
Yes, yes. We merely stayed in the garden.
Holy shit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you have that all to yourselves?
We had a quarter of that to ourselves.
Okay.
Well, between the two of us, we had half of it.
Okay.
That was
between the four of us, we had all of it.
That was next to the 4-acre garden.
Okay.
Walled garden. We had the entire right side of the building to ourselves, basically.
Wow.
My wife and I had the first floor, and my sister-in-law and her husband had the floor right above us. So we basically had half of that place. And these rooms, the bathroom, and I am not exaggerating at all. This is not facetious. This is not hyperbole. The bathroom was bigger than the lab.
All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
By a lot.
Yeah.
I'm talking the bathroom was from this wall to that wall.
Huh.
And it had a tub, and it had a shower, and it had, like,
steam room?
Rainfall shower and everything like that.
Oh,
it
God.
Was real fancy. And then the main room, we went up to into the main room. And the main room had a little seating area.
Sure.
Yes.
And then the step up. To the bed platform with full turndown service and the whole fucking nine yards. Like, we were just like, we are not in Kansas anymore. But we got that specifically because that's where we were staying for the twins' birthday.
Yeah.
And so for the twins' birthday, we went into Inverness and we went to a restaurant and listened to some traditional music in this pub. And it was an absolute fucking delight. Sitting in Inverness, listening to traditional Scottish music. It started out, we got there and we ate, and there was a band playing. The person with a guitar and a person with a fiddle. And this guy with a fiddle was fucking sawing on this fiddle for the entire... entire like rest of this set.
Like the devil was about to show up and challenge him,
basically.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And like then the next song started and he was sawing away at this thing. Like he did not slow down, and for like the entire fucking set, like, this man was on fire. It was just like Jesus Christ. And then they got done, and there was a 15-minute gap until the session started.
Oh,
yeah. Oh my!
And then a whole bunch of people with fiddles showed up and a couple Ilan pipes.
Oh, God.
And they all sat down in a circle in, you know, on the stage at a table in a circle, and they started just playing session music. And it was so cool.
That is so cool.
It was amazing.
Holy cow.
It was so, so good. Yeah, and then...
Well, now I want to go. Like, I wanted to go before, but, like, now... Now I need it.
I know, right? It was beyond good, and and then, yeah. Then we went to Leakey's bookstore.
Sounds delightful.
Leakey's bookstore is famous. It is huge. It is a used bookstore that is inside of an old church.
Okay.
So think of how big that is, and then turn all of that into a bookstore.
Oh,
it was pretty great. Did some more shopping, and then, then we went
back.
Turns
out they also sold scotch.
Yeah. Oh, coming to that.
We're getting there.
I love this. This is the joke that keeps on giving.
But because it's true. That's the thing. But then this was, like I said, the twins' birthday.
Yeah.
And then we went back to the castle, and we got fully dressed up in all of our fancy
finery.
Yeah. Like, I'm talking about dress kilt, socks, skeindo, waistcoat, watch chains, you know, flashes, the whole fucking nine yards.
Nice.
And we have our dinner at the castle. And we it was so good. Like, I can't even, like, so we ordered our food. We each got an appetizer, and we each got a main, and then they were like, okay. And they were like, okay, but first, here's the amuse-bouche.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought out this... It was a piece of blood pudding wrapped in, like, phyllo dough in this, like, peppercorn cream sauce.
Oh, my God.
And I... almost came just describing it again.
Yeah.
And it was just it was just big enough for one bite. Like, it was just this one bite. Just this one bite of... And
your bouche was a mousse.
I was about to say, that's the bouchiest of amuses.
My bouche was so amused. Oh, my God. And then we all got our appetizers, and we proceeded to take a bite and then pass it to the left.
Yeah.
And take a bite and pass it to the left. And they were all good. And, like, had this steak that was... by the way, just this whole trip, Scott and I every morning have been eating these Scottish breakfasts with haggis and black pudding and rasher and sausage.
Nice.
And, like... and eggs on toast, and it was then the next day is the day before we I didn't even get to Loch Ness. We went to Loch Ness. we get on a boat, and we go out onto Loch Ness. And Loch Ness, for those that don't know, is very, 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 very long and very skinny. But
I had a date like that once.
But it is very deep. Like,
but
it
not
is.
Like
I
that.
Was a date like yeah. that.
Oh,
once.
Oh, yeah.
But it is fair. It is, I believe, deeper than it is wide.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because Loch Ness sits on a fault line.
Okay. Oh.
Which, if you look at a map of Scotland, you can very clearly see.
Yes.
If you look at the line from Inverness down through Loch Ness, down, you know, and as you, it's just a line. And if you picture everything north of that line and you just kind of slide it to the southwest, suddenly Scotland makes more sense.
Geographically, anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because literally, that's what it is. Scotland looked like this, and then that line is sliced in it, and the whole thing slid to the north northeast. And you're going, oh, that's why it looks like it the way it does. So because it's on that fault line, Loch Ness is very, very deep.
Like the one, the Lake Baikal?
Kind of, but Lake Baikal is just deep, not because it sits on a fault line. It just happens to be really deep.
Real fucking deep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This actually, because it's on that fault line, it's being depressed in the middle like that. The cliffs on each side, they've got these hills on each side. Mm-hmm. They just keep going straight down, basically. They just keep cutting down. And they actually, on the boat, they actually have sonar. Going.
Oh.
For obvious reasons, this is Loch Ness.
Sure.
So they're like, you can see how deep it gets.
Yes.
But also, you might see something.
Right.
But, yeah. It
just says diver giving you the finger.
it was really, really lovely. And when
would be something.
But, like, it got down to, like, 758 feet deep in the middle.
Huh.
That is quite deep.
Yeah, extremely deep. And the entire width...
That's an inverted skyscraper.
Yeah. More than.
Mm-hmm.
And the width of Loch Ness is... The maximum width is about 1.7 miles wide at its widest point.
Huh.
So, like, it really cuts. And again, that is its widest point. So it just drops.
So we've got Great Lakes that are wider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so hugely wider. It is, again, very, very skinny and very, very long. So we're going down Loch Ness. Mm-hmm. And
I paid attention the first time.
So we're going towards Urquhart Castle, famous castle on Loch Ness.
Mm-hmm.
And in the distance, because again, very, very, very long, in the distance, it's just mist.
Mm.
And it was gorgeous. And then as we got closer to Urquhart Castle, this mist also got closer. Until about the point we got to Urquhart Castle, and then the mist was on us. And it just fucking... Skies opened up, pouring rain. We stop at Urquhart Castle. Some people get on, some people get off. And then we depart. And about that time, that wall passed us. 15 minutes, maybe. And then it was blue skies again.
Nice.
And as we're going north along the lock, heading back to where we started, we look back, and there's another wall of mist. Following us. gorgeous. Absolutely stunningly beautiful. Then we go back to the day before we leave. That night, we again, full dressed, everything, got completely 9 yards, and we went to a Kaylee.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And it was.
Oh, I bet the girls like that.
Rachel would have liked it more if she wasn't sick.
Oh, son of a bitch.
She was not keeping food down. She was very ill.
No.
So
we did have to unfortunately cut the night early because she was just like, I can't. But she really wanted to go, and she absolutely did. And Scott danced with Raiderly, a bunch of turns and stuff like that. But nice. So she was there, and she kind of sat in the corner with some of the old Scottish ladies and enjoyed watching us dance. But unfortunately, she was not so happy in the tummy department.
The highly changeable weather.
Yeah. But it was so much fun. We went to this, and the place that we went to was this cultural organization that is specifically for like the dance, but also the language. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they everything was said in Gaelic first, and then in English. And they highly recommended or encouraged people to speak in Gaelic as much as possible. So, like, they had these cheat sheets on every table and at the bar and everything like that for how to say things in Gaelic. And so they were, you know, like, if you're going to order a drink, order it in Gaelic.
Try it.
You know? And so we did. We would order things in Gaelic and say thank you in Gaelic and stuff like that. And it was a lot of fun. And they were like, at the end of the night, there's prizes for the best dancer and the best Gaelic speaker.
Oh.
Yeah. Super fun. We really, really enjoyed it. That is exciting. And I'm going to take us back a little bit, back to the Isle of Skye. When we were on the Isle of Skye, we had dinner at this restaurant. And this restaurant had an amazing, amazing food. One of the things they had on it was recommended scotch pairings for your meal.
Exactly.
Mm. And I was like, this looks delicious. I'm going to have this, and I would absolutely love to try this scotch pairing. And they were like, absolutely. And they brought out the scotch, and I drank it. And I said, what the fuck is this? Holy shit. and it was something called Glencadam.
Okay.
Have you heard of Glencadam?
I have not.
Have you heard of Glencadam?
I don't think so.
Neither have I heard of Glencadam, because you cannot get it here.
Huh.
And also it proves hard to find in Scotland, too.
Oh. Sure. Hmm.
Fairly small distillery. Not one of the big ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't show up a lot.
Okay.
I had to look. I stopped in a few places. And
okay.
could not find it. I did find at one place there was like a Glencadam 18 year, and it was like 145 pounds. And I went, wrong one. This is our last day, full day in Scotland. I'm like, mm-hmm. I have to find this. I have been in 3 or 4 different whiskey shops looking for this stuff. I have to find this.
It is now a mission.
It is, yes. Yeah. And I had found one online, and they were like, it's at this store. And I went in this store, and I was like, do you have this? And they're like, no, we don't have it. We don't even. And I was like, fuck. Huh. So I found this other store, and it was about 4 blocks away from the Cayley. Mm-hmm. So we drove into Inverness, and again, we're in full fancy.
Right.
Yeah.
And I dropped them off at the Cayley and walked through Inverness. To get a bottle of scotch.
Yes.
And I am 100% certain there are pictures of me now.
If there weren't before, there are now.
Yes.
But I got it.
Hell yes.
Yay!
I got it. All right. Go ahead and reach over to that bag. The box that was next to this bottle.
Okay, the green one.
Or the white one.
The white one.
The white one. Yeah.
Yes. Is it that one? Flip it around. No, not that one. Try the tube.
This is the best game.
Yes, that one.
Okay.
All right, here is...
That's not a box, salsa.
I couldn't remember what it was. I'm
colorblind, Jenna.
Yeah, not shape blind.
So anyway.
Not geometry blind.
I bought a lot of scotch. Okay. This is Glencadam.
Okay. All right,
this is a 10-year... unchill filtered natural color. This is not a very dark whiskey.
No, it's not. I'm seeing that.
This has...
Looks like apple juice.
Where's the tasting?
That's sort of like hay colored.
Tasting notes of pineapple, lemon zest, and vanilla.
Hmm.
Which, for a scotch?
Yeah.
Nose. Tangy and fresh with aromas of tropical fruits and citrus bound by a warm pod vanilla sweetness and warming cake spices. The palate is fruity and crisp with layers of cooked pineapple, lemon posset, vanilla sponge cake, and green apple. Finish. Warm impressions of key lime pie, almond flan, and sherbet lemons, leaving a nutty, peppery finish. None of this sounds like
scotch.
Right. But...
cooked pineapple should be fine.
But when you put this all together, you get Glencadam 10. And this shit is my white whale. And I was so happy when I got it back to the States that I drank it again and went, yep, still like it.
All right.
I had not imagined that.
Oh, that smells...
It smells so sweet.
It does. It smells a little sweet,
but it's got a tropicalness to it.
It does.
It's there is like a vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a spice cake kind of.
Yes.
But not like a heavily spiced spice cake, mm-hmm. like the more cakey part of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My mouth is watering just smelling this.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sipping it.
Mm-hmm. All right, it's happening.
Mmm. Mmm.
Wow.
Huh. Okay, so that's heaven, right?
Yeah.
That's Oh, so if I'm a good little Christian girl, I get to drink this all the time. Great. I'm in. Sold.
Yeah. This
like it's got a lovely bite to it, but it's
It's
so
smooth and comforting. Mm-hmm. It's comforting. It's comforting. It's a comforting scotch.
And this bottle right here is what I've got.
Yeah.
So like that is something that is
precious cargo.
Very much. Like I'm having people try it, and then this is going way up for special occasions.
It's getting a scotch safe.
Yeah. Yep. But this stuff,
Scotch card.
So if anybody's
James,
ever traveling in Scotland and wants to bring home a present for me, I will pay you back. But bring me some more of this Glencadam 10-year, and I will absolutely buy it.
Yeah, this tastes like a hug. This tastes like I'm trying to describe flavors, but it's all so well blended together.
It's refreshing.
Yeah.
It's fruity. It's got that citrusy.
For me, refreshing has more of a cool vibe to it. This has a warm vibe to it.
Yes, this is warm, but it's fresh.
Yeah.
Maybe not refreshing, but very fresh.
Like a freshly baked cake.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Upside down pineapple cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And again, none of this does justice to what it actually is. Mm-hmm. So. Now imagine that paired with like a creamy like mushroom pasta sauce.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see why this was.
Oh wow.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That is. Yep. All right.
And then we got on a plane. And we
fantastic.
We drove like a 3-hour drive from Inverness to Edinburgh, and we dropped off the car, and we hopped on a plane, and we get to Dublin, and at Dublin we got through pre-clearance for customs.
Okay.
Now we had 2 hours in Dublin.
Okay.
Oh no.
Well, but that I mean, trying to get through customs and everything like that can be a problem.
No. So actually,
but also yeah.
So, I found an app that will let you basically clump your group together as a family, and you get through customs as a group.
Okay.
Nice. All right.
And what it is you scan everybody's passports into it, basically you make your declaration when you land at Dublin, and then when you go through customs, you just say, we're in this together, here's our pre- filled everything. Yeah. This is, you know, and they just kind of do us as a group.
Yeah.
And we had at this point gone through many iterations of how are we going to get all this scotch home.
Right.
Because if we were going straight to the America, it wouldn't matter. We could do as much as we wanted. But because we were going through Dublin, we could only bring 1 liter per person.
Ah.
That is restrictive, yeah.
And we had, and I did the math, 5.5 liters of scotch.
Oh.
Per person.
Did you find two strangers?
So we were just like, okay, are we going to ship all this stuff home? How are we going to, what are we going to label it when
that
we ship it home?
Are
we, yeah, exactly. Like, do we ship it and declare it there? Like, when my sister-in-law came back from Hungary, she sent a case of wine home and labeled the box as olive oil.
I mean,
and you know, it got home and whatever. But like we did a lot. We were just like, shipping is going to cost this much and customs will cost blah blah blah. And we finally like, it is going to be the cheapest to just declare it at customs and pay the fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is what we are going to do. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
So we get to customs in Dublin, and I've got this app out, and I've got everybody scanned in, and when we get there, it's like, do you have anything to declare? And I was like, we got this to declare, and it's like, okay, everybody needs to take a picture, so we're like going through the lines, like taking selfies of ourselves on this app, just so, and it's like, okay, this is the American, like, mobile passport thing. Look for this sign that says go to this area. We're like, cool, that's what we're going
like,
to do.
Almost like the Clear app or like some, yeah.
Yeah. So we get through, we go through the lines, we get through, and then we go through customs.
Okay.
And I go first, and I'm like, okay, and I get through, and I'm fine. And then Raylee goes, and she asks the person, like, oh, we were here. We were looking for this thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, we don't have that at Dublin.
Oh.
Oh, no.
And I was so angry because everything I had researched said, yes, Dublin is one of the places that does this app. The app itself says Dublin is one of the places this is done. The website says Dublin is one of the places.
Dublin, Minnesota.
They don't do it here. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Because I had spent so much time and effort and energy doing this so we could get through customs quickly, and they didn't even have it. My luggage and Scott's luggage are the two luggages that have all the scotch in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Roughly evenly split.
Yeah.
They didn't ask me at all if I had anything to declare.
All right.
And they actually, they've got the automatic passport control now. You scan your passport and you just kind of go in. They do an automatic thing.
Okay.
Scott got pulled aside because his hair was crazy, and so it, like, and so he talked to a person, and they were like, do you have anything to declare? And he's like, I don't think so, and he just went him through.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
Smooth.
So
almost as smooth as what I'm drinking right now.
Yeah.
Mm. Both he and my luggages were overweight. By a lot. My luggage weighed 65 pounds.
Ah.
And a lot of that was scotch. So anyway, we get through, and then we get to long flight to Chicago. Our flight at Chicago, our plane was on time.
Oh.
Huh.
But another plane had a mechanical failure, and so they stole our plane.
Oh, sure.
And so then we had to wait for the next plane.
Yeah.
God damn it. Which meant we landed at Terminal H. We had to go all the way to Terminal, like, F, and then to another gate at Terminal F, and then to Terminal G, and then finally back to H. And then we got on a plane, and we flew away, and we flew home. And James, very lovely, agreed to pick us up from the airport.
Oh, what a nice
and it was
guy.
Already going to be, like, 12:30, and then our flight was delayed an hour and a half. So
oh,
it was like,
no.
It was like 2:30 by the time we finally got there. So James,
in the morning.
Yep.
Yeah. So James, thank you so very much. We got you a little present.
Oh, thank you so much.
I know how much you love tiny things, so I got you a very, very tiny quake.
Oh, let me see.
It's so cute.
That is adorable.
I found the tiny, tiny quake, and I was like, yes, this is James's.
That is so good.
I bought that at Stirling Castle.
It's gorgeous, too.
And so now it's a family heirloom.
I mean, that's beautiful. So
that's
thank
amazing.
You so much for driving us well to the airport done. And picking us up, and then
absolutely.
Being so, so lovely about the hour and everything like that. But no, seriously, thank you. But you may be, it was a lovely trip.
Thank
and we
so
were
much.
There, the four of us for, you know, a little over a week and a half. And you may be wondering, how does four people spend a week and a half together and not hate each other? And I'll tell you how. By playing games.
I mean,
and
okay.
We played a game.
Oh.
That I'm going to tell you all about now.
Oh.
And you are going to thank me later.
All right.
Because this game was taught to my wife by a friend of hers. And this is, as you're driving down the road, everybody in the car, whoever sees cows, says cows.
Mm-hmm.
Those cows are theirs.
Yes.
They say,
oh.
There's 20 cows in that field. Those are my cows. Those are my herd. And the next person says, horses. Those horses are mine. There's five horses. Those are my horses.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're driving along, you gather a herd.
Okay.
You've got some sheep. You got some cows. You got some goats. You got some whatever.
Right.
I mean, at points we had herds of sheep that were like 200 sheep and you know, 50 cows and two goats and you know,
and a chicken.
And a bunch of chickens and some seagulls. Like, as long as the seagulls are on the ground, that counts.
Oh, it has to be on the ground.
Has to be on the ground.
Same with the sheep.
Yep. If
yes,
Donnie Lavoche.
If you see, if you see a cemetery, you say cemetery, and your herd is okay, but everybody else's herds die.
Oh, that's evil.
So it was a slaughter. we so many dead animals.
I was really hoping for zombie cows, but you know, whatever.
So
what?
On the way, we were on Mole, and Scott saw on the side of the road, sitting in a chair, holding a sign that was said like "slow down" or something, was this creepy mannequin. And he goes, "Creepy mannequin." And we're like,
"Yeah?
Okay, well, why not? Right, we'll allow it." And I'm not joking, but then we went to Sky and he saw another creepy mannequin sitting on the side of the road in a chair, dressed up in farmer clothes with a sign that said something like "slow down" or something like that. And he went, "Creepy mannequin." We're like, okay, now he's got two creepy mannequins. But we also decided that the creepy mannequins could not die.
Of course.
Oh, no.
Absolutely.
So no matter how many sheep or cats or goats or cows or whatever died, Scott's two creepy mannequins were unkillable.
Oh, no.
And following him.
Don't want.
Oh, man. Now I want to dress as a creepy mannequin holding a sign that says "slow down."
The other game you play is when you're walking down the street with somebody, you're often walking side by side, right? If you are walking on the left, you get the left side of the street. Mm-hmm. And if you're walking on the right, you get the right side of the street. Sure. And whenever you pass a pub, the name of the pub tells you how many legs you have.
Oh.
So if you have a place called, for example, the Cock and Bull, that's six legs.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the King's Men, two legs. If you don't know, like, something ambiguous,
say the four Kingsmen.
Kingsmen, then you go by the picture.
Okay.
How many of the Kingsmen are on the sign? And if there's two men, you get four legs. Something like a bunch of grapes. No legs. Mm-hmm. No points. Mm-hmm. And then when you reach your destination, whoever has the most legs wins.
And if it's, like... What if their legs are in the air? Do they count?
It counts.
Okay.
Yeah, it
falls. I wondered if this.
No.
If the bird rule was in play.
These are different rules. So if we were on foot or if we were in the car, no matter what, we had a game to play.
Yeah.
And it was genuinely a lot of fun. And that, like, there was
and
one...
then Scott's like, "Creepy mannequin."
Yeah.
Oh no.
But there was, like, we're driving home again. We're driving home. And again, my sister-in-law, she's not feeling good. So she's sleeping most of this final trip. And we were so upset with her because she literally at one point woke up, looked around and went, "Cemetery!"
Fuck.
And then fell back asleep.
Brutal.
I am not surprised by this at all.
Absolutely
oh
crushing.
Oh my God. I can see that entirely.
It was so good. So we had so much fun. What else? We went to a Clutie Well near Culloden. A Clutie Well is a Scottish thing that it is a well, a spring where you attach cluties. Our cluties are bits of cloth.
Okay.
Clutie means cloth. And what you do is you take this strip of rag and you dip it in the water. And while it's in the water, you think of an ailment.
Oh.
Whether you have a physical ailment or a mental ailment or a heartache or you know, some sort of problem that you are dealing with. You focus on that. And then you tie this rag to a tree.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And over time, as the rag disintegrates, your problem disintegrates with it.
Huh.
Until the rag completely disintegrates and your problem is gone.
Fascinating.
And so these Clutie Wells are gorgeous. Because you pop over this ridge and there is this well with brightly colored strips of cloth everywhere. Mm.
In that sounds lovely.
Various states of disintegration. And they have signs posted that are like, do not use synthetic fibers, they will not disintegrate, and therefore negate the entire fucking purpose of this.
Right.
Wool or cotton only. And so like that, so we did that. We left our our cloths there, and no, it was really, really a cool experience to be able to go that and do that. Yeah, and then, like I said, we went to the Culloden battlefield. I got to see where the memorial stones for my clan was at.
Oh.
Things like that. What else? I got to feed a Helan Ku apples. Yeah, forgot to mention that. So many things. And the scenery was... I seriously could go on for way longer. It's already been over an hour, and I have barely touched the surface. But we should probably... give you a chance to talk about Fringe. So we're going to take a break.
Yeah.
We're going to re-get new drinks, and then we'll talk about that. So we'll be back. If you guys like what you heard, you can visit us on our website at aonpodcast.com. If you want to talk to us directly, you can send us an email at either Jenna, Salsa, or James at aonpodcast.com, or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Patton was kind enough to give us the music for this episode and every episode. You can see what he's up to at brandonpatton.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, but especially you can help us out by rating our show. Check out our merch. You can go to society6.com/AON podcast.
Why wasn't I recording? There are some moments.
Sucker.
There are some moments when audio evidence would be so nice to have.
Uh-huh.
But I just have to.
Uh-huh.
We're back. I'm Salsa.
I'm James.
I'm delighted.
That's very true.
And also, I'm Jenna.
You're about to be more delighted because I have more booze.
Ooh.
We have the other cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
This is the creamy one. This is a Kranichan Moonshine.
Oh.
With cream soda.
Ooh.
Now, if you know what Kranichan is, you already know this is going to be great.
I do not.
Oh, wow.
So Kranichan is a dessert.
Okay.
It is like oatmeal and... I'll just bring it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And give you the...
It smells incredible.
It smells creamy and oaty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a dessert of cream and fresh raspberries,
mm-hmm.
bolstered by Scottish oats and whiskey.
All right.
It is like it is similar to like a trifle. Mm-hmm. If you've ever had a trifle,
mm-hmm.
so you've got these layers of like cream and then whiskey soaked oats, and then like cream and then fruit, and it's very, very good. So you've got the raspberry and the cream and the oats, and then you've got this, the cream soda to it.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh.
Mm.
Fuck, wow. That's good. Whoa.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Speaking of cream.
Yeah.
Oh. I got a little shiver.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I should make Kranichan. That's what I should make.
Oh.
You can't have any...
Damn it.
Unless, you can't really make a... Can you make a whipped cream out of, like...
I mean, there is vegan whipped cream.
Okay. Huh. But can you make it at home? Or is that something you have to buy and they have to have, like, stiffeners in it?
They do have, like... I don't know if it's almond or oat, but they do have non-dairy whipping cream.
Okay, they do. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think you can even get it in Cub.
Oh,
like,
I will have to look into making Kranichan for you.
It's not uncommon. It's not, like, most people don't get it, but, like, it's not that uncommon, so.
Okay. And then beside it, we have another whiskey. This is the most expensive bottle I've ever bought.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
This is Old Malt Cask.
Okay.
Now, what Old Malt Cask is not actually a distillery. Old Malt Cask is a company that buys casks from other distillers.
Oh.
Okay. And what they do is they buy the best. And they and all of these are single cask expressions. Usually when you buy a bottle of whiskey, they have taken a whole bunch of casks and they have blended them together to get a uniform flavor. Because the wood of each cask is ever so slightly different and gives you a slightly different flavor. And to, and when you have something like a scotch, you want them to, you want people to know what they're getting. And so you want to kind of hit the mean, right? Old Malt Cask buys individual casks and they bottle individual casks. This is a single barrel in this bottle. And this bottle is one of, depending on the size of the barrel, between 150 to 400 bottles from that barrel.
And then that's it.
That's it. So what you get in this bottle is unique.
Yes.
This was bought from the Craigellachie Distillery in Speyside.
Okay.
All right.
And it is delightful. It has a nose of apples, toffee, and garden flowers, a palate of fruit chews, salted caramel, and red berries, and a finish, a long finish with lingering spice.
Something something I'm going to note here is that so far, all of the tasting notes and all of the like nose notes that you've given from directly from these bottles have been way more accurate than what I'm used to.
Sure.
I
mean, they're
from
a bit
scotch
more
that's sold in
they're a bit more precise about this.
Yeah.
So this is one of 753 bottles charged from a sherry butt cask aged 15 years. This single cask was distilled from April 2007 and bottled July 2022.
Huh.
Okay.
Now,
wild.
Smell on this is delightful.
It is.
It is a sherry like, cask.
I've come back like four or five times.
It is a sherry cask. You get definitely get those that those berry smells to it and stuff like that. Now, I personally find this one a bit hot. So take a sip of it.
All right.
I find this one a bit hot.
A little bit, but I like it.
But I find that this one really benefits from a drop of water.
All right.
Okay.
And to that end, I have this little guy.
Ooh.
Oh, what?
Wow. Well, that's extremely
pleasant. Oh, my God. That's adorable.
I have in my hand an inverted teardrop. Filled with water, with a hole on the side, which means you can do this.
Yeah. All right.
James is going to break it.
Yeah. The water comes out pretty quick, so when you break the seal, just for a half a second, like real fast.
Well, now you're just making a mess.
He's no good at this. It takes a practiced hand. Let's see if Jenna can get it.
Yeah.
So I cover the thing. Do this.
A
little much, but at least I didn't drip out the hole. Like some people.
So now, smell that again. A lot of that.
Oh, that's chill. That's more vanilla.
Yeah. So we've lost that really strong sherry and berry, and now that apple is coming out. And it's really cooled down when you sip it. Suddenly you get that caramel.
Yes.
And you get that sweetness.
Wow.
Nope. I like it. It's lovely.
And the smokiness that I really like.
Yeah, a little
there
bit.
There is definitely a smokiness to it, yeah.
There was just a hint of it in the first... But after the water opened it up a little bit, it's got this like beautifully round smokiness to it.
But it that water cooled it down way down, and you suddenly get all of those the more subtle notes. So, yeah. Thank you, Duncan, at the whiskey shop in Victoria Street in Edinburgh. So, yeah, really, really enjoy that one. So, anyway, that's enough about me.
Yeah.
What did y'all do while I was away?
Oh, nothing much.
Oh, I just did this tiny little theater festival. Mm.
Tell me more.
It's very fringy.
Oh, we've got one of those in Edinburgh.
Fuck.
Uh-huh. Do you know what's super fun? I'm not fazed by this because I knew you were going to make the joke. Because I've met you twice.
Amazing.
But no, a friend of mine actually was in Edinburgh for the Fringe Festival there.
Fantastic.
He stepped up to replace somebody in Endometriosis the Musical.
Lovely. Oh.
Which I had seen at TRP a year ago before I got my hysterectomy. So, yep. So, yeah. So I did know about that.
Do they fly your uterus in
festival.
For the...
No.
Oh.
Jesus, that was adenomyosis.
Ah.
You fucking dude. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Only
subtraction. Adeno.
So anyway, no, Minnesota Fringe Festival happened. So the past month of my life has been entirely focused on all of that.
For sure.
Yeah, I ended up doing a stupid... It was a really dumb idea. I had this dumb idea 2 years ago. And then I told other people about this dumb idea, and they're like, we want to do this dumb idea. So, I put together an IP collaborative, IP independent producer. In the Fringe, there's the Fringe managed venues, and then there's the independent producer venues or the bring your own venues, right? So I got a bunch of independent producers together to go in on a venue. So we took over the Phoenix, which is one of my favorite theaters.
It's lovely.
There's a little home feel to it for me. And the idea is that all these independent producers would be producing shows on a theme. Specifically one of, like, regarding social issues. So we decided to all do a thing on mental illness or mental health. So all of the shows that were produced were shows that were based on mental health. We called the IP Collaborative the Social Butterfly Project. We do have a website. It links to all of our shows and has a few resources for, like, mental health organizations that we partnered with. We partnered with some mental health organizations. We had some resources available. We had some mental health activities. So there are 5 shows. I'm going to talk about a couple of them quick. One of them was called When I Was Afraid by David Hellstrom, who is a delightful storyteller in the Twin Cities area. And he kind of joined towards the end of the cutoff period for the cheap payment for IP. Because you have to register.
Yeah.
So to get your ball in the Fringe lottery, you have an application, but then... Once you're accepted, you have to pay your production fees, and that can be anywhere from like $500 to $800, I think, right? It's a chunk of change this year. So to independently produce, you only need to pay a registration fee. In March, it's $225. In April, I want to say it's $335. And in May, it's $445. So it, like, increases the later you hold off on it. Yeah. So you really want to get it in by end of March. But that only gets you registration into the festival. You still have to provide your own venue. You provide your own technicians. You provide your own box office. And when I was talking with this about people, I was telling CJ Mantel about this. Like, this is my idea. This is what I'm thinking. I've already got a couple of IPs on board. And she went, I'm going to run your front of house, and you're going to give me an artist pass for it. And
well,
I said,
all right.
Yes, you are, and yes, I am. she told. She did not ask. And so there was that. And then I needed a technical director.
Sometimes it's just easier that way.
Right? Yeah. She's like, no, this is happening. Well, because she had done independent production box office before for Strike Theater the year previous.
Sure, yeah.
And had ideas on how she would have implemented it.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically gave her a place to implement those ideas.
Again, yeah. It was the perfect situation. But again, yep. It's just easier to just say, this is happening, yep. rather than trying to dance around it.
Yeah, and like I hadn't even figured out that portion of it yet, and CJ was like, oh, I've got it.
Great.
And then she did.
Yep.
So, and then I knew I wanted at least like a technical director, somebody that knew everything that was happening with the sound and lighting boards so mm-hmm. that people didn't step on each other's toes. So I asked Melissa Karcher if she would be my technical director. I was like, yeah, and we can get you a couple of people as well. And she's like, 25 shows? I can do that.
Well, all right.
I was like, okay, but can we have somebody else know what you're doing in case you die, please? That would be great.
Just on the off chance.
So, yeah, good friend of the podcast, Stefan, was...
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He helped Melissa during the first few days of tech and kind of... I don't know. They figured out whatever they figured out between them. So if she died, maybe he could step in and help. Or just, you know, she just assumed she wasn't going to die and was like, well, Stefan helped me. Now I'm good. Like, I honestly don't know what they did. But I'm glad Melissa didn't die.
It was arranged so that if at any point in time Melissa's life was at risk, she would suddenly transpose herself in space and time with Stefan Senpai, and Stefan Senpai would instead be murdered.
Oh, okay. Oh,
by,
that's sad.
You know, a bus or what have you.
But he has a family.
He does. Oh, but that's sad. So does Melissa. But I mean,
the car is adorable.
That's very true. That's very true.
Anyway,
no one wants to see it, but it was very courageous of Stefan Senpai to step up.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So Melissa just did all of the shows. And I was like, can I offer you anything, like an artist bash? She's like, sure. I don't even know if she was just like, I'm just here because it's fun. Her type of crazy, and I'm so glad I could offer that
to
her. So, yeah, I got all of those set up. And then also the IPs, like I said, David Hallstrom, he was kind of towards the end of March. I talked to him about it. Because a mutual friend of ours had said that David had this show concept.
Yeah.
And his show was called When I Was Afraid, and it talks about fear and anxiety and imposter syndrome. And so he and I met to talk about this, and he's like, wow, I told him everything that we're doing with the Social Butterfly Project and mental health awareness. And he's like, man, I don't know if my show is a good fit. Like, I don't know if it's good enough. And I said, David, are you having imposter syndrome over your show about imposter syndrome? Because I think you just made my point.
Yeah.
So convinced him to do it, and I'm glad we did. This poor guy. He started with a 3-person cast that then dropped to a 2-person cast.
Oh.
That then became a 1-person storytelling show that then became a 2-person cast that I think it was like a week before open, his other person's like spouse went to the hospital. And
oh no!
So it was back down to a 1-person. So he's trying to find another person. He did find another person for it.
Oh.
So he did. It happened, and it was great. Like it was a wonderful show. I don't know how he pulled it off. He had so many things happening over the course of that time, but when I saw it, it was fantastic. So, excellent. Hats off to him. He did a great job. So, that was one of the shows. Another one was The Lousiest Werewolves, Mania in the Moonlight, produced by Rob Ward. Mm. And it is about bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
He himself is bipolar, and two other bipolar castmates And it was, Rob Ward is known for his loud and boisterous and off the beaten path shows. There were three of them.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the most bipolar show to ever bipolar about bipolar. I can't even. It was glorious. It was amazing and fantastic and glorious. So, yeah, we had that. And then I had a couple of shows, but there was this one other show. I think it was Dueling Dragons. No. Fisticuff Phoenix.
Aggressively discussing manticores.
Oh, there you go.
No, wait, that's Convergence.
Oh, shit, that is. it's a show called Fighting Unicorns, produced by Angela Fox.
Yeah.
Written and produced by Angela Fox.
Yeah.
And it was a feature-length show, which is a thing that you can do as an independent production. Mm-hmm. You just have to start at the same time as the other Fringe shows.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, otherwise you can go as long as you want. And so, yeah, Angela produced that show. I think somebody was in it.
Jason Kruger.
Oh, that's right. He directed it.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, he did a great job
also,
with it.
James.
James Ruth?
James Ruth.
Yeah, no, he's great,
was
too.
I've heard of that
wonderful
guy.
He did the Owl Wizard, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was the Owl Wizard.
Yeah. Anyone else we know? Like Angela starred in it.
Yes, Angela was in it. Yeah,
I've heard of her.
If you, Charles Hubble...
Oh,
the inimitable
he's great.
Charles Hubble.
Absolutely.
Yeah, was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
Anyone else? Can you think
couple
of?
Couple trees.
Ooh.
I've heard of trees.
Yeah.
Mm.
Some tables, a few walls.
Have you ever heard the name James Fairbairn?
Yes, I have. I know that guy.
Oh, do you?
Brutal.
I heard a rumor. I heard a rumor he may have had some involvement in the show as well.
I was. It was like the most wonderful. Oh, wrong pipe. So it was the most wonderful mixture of being like the Greek chorus, but also being. It was also sort of like. Wonderfully fifth grade, being the fifth candy cane in the fifth grade production of the Nutcracker.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it was.
You're just happy to be there.
It was all of those things. but we were various things, different small puppets and scenery and
you were everything,
furniture and some people were in the Owl Wizard's study, some people were tables, some people were the fireplace with little red and orange gloves that they were using to make little dancing flames and things like that. Just wonderful. So it was a spectacular time. It was
sounds very kabuki.
A little bit, yeah. It was very involved and extremely physical because you are being all of the scenery, and I had spent, 2 hours every show, like physically running, basically. And anytime I wasn't running, I was standing poised in a particular posture to represent a thing.
And then your muscles seize up. And,
But the real trick was the rehearsals where we were going over those same scenes for
over
4 hours. Three, 4 hours. But the end result...
It's like going through a fight choreo sometimes.
Yeah,
where you get done and your arms are just like, I am going to fall off.
Yeah, you just pop off your Lego arms.
Yeah.
I'd like a new set of these, please.
Yep.
It was incredibly physical for such a simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, when people left... our entire job was just to create the world that Angela and Charlie's characters inhabit.
Right.
And the reactions that we got from the audience were so good. Mm-hmm. They were so good. And not just because they're family and they have to.
Yeah.
But, like, people were earnestly, honestly, very deeply affected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
I think it was a wonderful show for that. And I'm really proud to have been a tree in the, in that show. It was so lovely.
No, that's very cool.
And meanwhile, we're all backstage. Like, during the final scene of the final act, we're all backstage just weeping as Angela and Charlie act their fucking asses off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good. Yeah.
Because motherfuckers can act.
Yeah, can.
Yeah. And then I saw two other shows.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
There were two more shows?
At that same theater. I saw a bunch more shows. But because I was also paid for
the Fringe Festival this year was only five shows.
It was five shows.
Wow.
Yeah.
There are five shows.
I saw these two. You may know something about them. The Label Maker was one.
Sure. I was going to start with the other one.
And?
Yeah.
Tales from the Trauma Dump? Or Stories from the Trauma Dump? Stories from the Trauma Dump.
Yeah. Wow. I'm glad it was impactful for you. I can't even remember the name. I mean,
that's not what I remember about
it. I mean, if you're focusing on the name instead of the content, then...
Well, sure.
I had a full-on conversation with Ariel about her... The piece that she performed.
Maybe
later.
I should tell people what
please,
it is.
Please.
So, Stories from the Trauma Dump. We'll start with that.
I thought it was Tales from the Trauma Dump.
I swear to fucking God, I'm going to stab you both.
You went through so much to go to Scotland. Does that rock protect you from stabbings? Maybe you should have.
As long as I don't drown in my own blood.
Got the stabbings one.
Oh, God.
What kind of Iona marble does that?
Anyway, so Stories from the Trauma Dump. Fucker. it was a storyteller showcase, collaboration of storytellers. All of them doing comedic takes on mental health. So everybody got 10 minutes. Some took more than that, but everybody was given up to 10 minutes.
A performer taking more than their time? Yep. What?
Boy, howdy. The first couple of shows were pushing and maybe even just a little bit over. Ooh, buddy. But yeah, so I asked 10 people if they wanted to be in my show, and they all said yes.
Well.
I had so many more people I was going to ask when my top tier people told me no, and none of them did. So I had, I'm just going to read through the list real quick of storytellers that happened. There was Allison Broren, who is an Emmy Award winning storyteller, you guys. Like,
fucking fantastic.
Yeah. Ariel Pinkerton.
Whew.
Duck Washington. Mm-hmm. Huamua. Mm. Jack Cesarius, Mahmoud Hakima, Nissa Nordland, Reverend Matt Kesson did a little mini Monster Science.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Ryan Velicor and Shannon Custer. And this is like top tier fucking people, you guys.
I saw most of them, and I am sad that I did not see all of them.
Right. There was no way to see all of them unless you went to every show.
Yeah.
Except you could have, if you went to four of the shows, you could have seen everybody. Because for the shows, I had four people that could only do one.
Yeah.
So that's what they did.
Yeah.
So, it was an exceptional thing. I got to host them and they all told stories. Some of them were more serious and heartfelt. Some of them were lighter. I think we had a really good mix. But yeah, James, you were talking to Ariel.
Yes.
About her piece specific?
Yes. She had a magnificent piece. When, they were all different subjects.
Right.
As you said.
All mental health based.
All based in that. Reverend Matt's extremely charming mini monster science was on Madness, which was spectacular.
Obviously, and great, yeah.
Covered a surprisingly broad topic and deep history, but also managed to do it gently and tactfully.
Yeah, absolutely.
In only a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
Which speaks to his incredible talent.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No, incredible.
I got to see Ryan Bellacore talk about past trauma, their history with, in particular, OCD.
Yep.
And that was absolutely fucking fantastic. Allison, who is also one of the people associated with Strike Theater.
Yeah, she's a co-founder of Strike Theater.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was trying to remember exactly, but yes, spectacular.
Yeah.
Ariel had done a bit on invisible work and
the invisible workload.
Yeah, and how that relates to mental health and this is a subject that is very near and dear to my heart,
right?
And that I've read a couple of books on, and I had to ask. I was like, have you read this book? Is this, what inspired this? And is this, this thing? And I just had a super, super lovely conversation with Ariel just prior to to your label maker show.
Right.
Yeah. I think that Duck's piece on surviving the pandemic and getting through life by adopting a new hobby was also super, super
good. Good.
It explains so much about his passions for his different hobbies and things. Absolutely good.
Yeah.
You chose amazing people. You did a fantastic job as the host.
Oh,
but
good.
You also did an absolutely incredible solo show. The label maker.
The problem was I don't know how to describe it. It was because I wanted to talk about the concept of shared symptoms between diagnoses, right? And I think one of the foundational paragraphs in my piece is comparing a need for orderliness or extreme orderliness can be both OCD or an autism spectrum trait, right? But that they both have different backgrounds. People with obsessive compulsive disorder, if they don't do it a specific way or a specific number of times or whatever, everything is wrong and everything is going to be broken and fail. So they have this compulsion out of fear. Whereas many, not all, but many people on the autism spectrum that have to have this kind of orderliness thing have it because when they complete the task, they get the dopamines. Mm-hmm. So for them, they get the bonus feature. I say them like I'm not on the autism spectrum, and this is a main driver in my life. But
those other people, unrelated.
Those other people,
to your assembly of diagnoses.
But yeah, I very much need specific structure and all this other stuff, and I drive all of these tasks and all this, and people are like, "Oh, that's OCD," and I'm like, "No, no, I'm just a little spectrum-y."
May I compliment you about a particular a particular structure of the show that I really enjoyed. It was, you have this really insightful discussion about all of these different talks and how they overlap, but I felt that framing it as a game for the audience to play.
Yeah.
And inviting the audience to follow along through where these things overlap. Even after you get the kind of the punchline of both. Mm-hmm. It could be both. It could be either. It could be both. That it was still extremely fascinating. And deeply, like, reflective.
So
for me.
So yeah, having, to explain it.
Yeah,
I'm glad you're delighted by it, but let me explain it.
By all means.
So over the course of the show, I would provide two different diagnoses and a list of symptoms, and I asked the audience to internally decide which diagnosis they thought it applied to.
Gotcha.
The punchline is both.
Yep.
Right? It's about shared symptoms and how, and I expanded from that into how easy it is to get misdiagnosed or incorrectly diagnosed. Another through thread in this was me talking about childhood abuse and my own traumas growing up and the shift from physical to emotional. And then at the end, the final section talks about when I was diagnosed as borderline personality disorder from a shit fucking therapist listing off, because my mom listed off a bunch of different symptoms I had.
Right.
That could have been borderline personality disorder, or maybe, just maybe, complex post-traumatic stress disorder.
But where would you have gotten that?
Right.
Trauma response.
Yes. So, that's the full thing. That's the compilation of all of those. In between that, I talked about other diagnoses I have. The brain injury is a mental health thing. It's a more physical mental health thing. Like, it's an actual health of the brain. But there's that. And I talked about being cyclothymic. How schizophrenia, my great grandma was schizophrenic. And I ended that on a pun that, I already knew James was in the audience, but boy, howdy, did it become apparent.
That was good too.
I've told you, I'm not against a good pun. There's just very few of them, and they should be set up appropriately.
Good, yeah.
The keyword is good. Mm-hmm. And I talked about phobia. I actually reused a story that I did at a Fearless show about my fear of Care Bears. But yeah, so I had a few other related stories, but that all just kind of came to a head at the end, and the whole point is that you can't judge somebody. You can't label somebody based off of symptoms alone. You need context.
Yeah.
And then having a label doesn't necessarily solve anything. You don't stop at a label. You have to do the work afterwards.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit about how judgy we can all be without being leaning too heavily into that, because I didn't want people to get defensive and shut down. But in between the pieces, I had somebody ask afterwards, because I do, after the show, I say, hey, a couple of things. Number one, I'm generally a touch-adverse person anyway. Even if you are on my hugging friends list, please don't, because I need to regulate. Mm-hmm. Everything feels itchy after that show.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Oh, God. And so a friend was like, well, how do you regulate afterwards? And I'm like, honestly, the trick is I have built in pieces for me to regulate throughout the show so that it takes me less time than it otherwise would.
Yeah.
Also so that I can, get through the show.
Yeah. Little dance breaks to look forward to.
Also tons of booze.
I very specifically don't drink before that show.
Yeah, I know.
Afterwards.
That's what I mean, is afterwards. How do you regulate afterwards?
Whiskey ginger, believe.
That's
how. But there is one part in the show where I basically relive a moment of abuse from my mom. And I, Catherine Hansen did the voiceover work for it. And I knew right away as soon as I talked to her about it, I'm like, I need her to, I said, can you go from Umbridge to Shrieking Harpy? And she went, oh yeah, that's easy. I'm like, yeah, yep. And she, man, she got it in one. She, no notes, just nailed it. So yeah, there is a part where I'm literally reliving a specific trauma moment from my childhood. And yeah, I built in for that piece. I don't get to use it, but I gave it to the audience, and you're welcome. A slide that goes through the paced breath, pacing breath,
yeah,
or paced breathing. That's what I wanted. That was my gift to you. Just to help the audience get through it. I had little 30-second music snips in between a bunch of my stories. Mm-hmm. And I moved myself back and forth on the stage so that, because movement is another way to help with regulation. Mm-hmm. Pausing in between music is a regulation thing. Yeah, there was a lot I built into the show itself so that I could get through it. And both of my shows got super high fucking praise.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Stories from the Trauma Dump got all 5 kitty reviews. It also got 5 stars from noted fringe blogger Matthew Everett. Stories or the label maker got 2 5 kitties and 1 4.5 kitty reviews.
What is a kitty review?
Kitties are stars. They're just the on the Fringe website. Yeah.
Gotcha. I understand.
The Fringe website has their own review system. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And it got 4.5 stars from noted Fringe blogger Matthew Everett. He also marked mine as a very highly recommended.
Well.
Yeah. So, hoity-toity la-di-da. Although I am honestly just delighted by it. I'm just like, oh, he saw me, he liked it. But yes, let's be pretentious about it, shall we?
A little.
Dude, we have given that guy so much shit over the years.
Oh, God. Yeah, so there was that. And I guess the only other thing about it is that, like, it was very well received for the handful of people that saw it. I had very low attendance.
I'm sorry.
Though it was very frustrating, and it's a thing that comes up with IP. It's hard to do IP.
Yeah.
But also, all of the other shows at the Phoenix were getting good attendance. Stories from the Trauma Dump got pretty decent attendance. Just the label maker. I was like, God damn it.
I'm sorry.
I'm literally going through, like, reliving trauma and abuse on stage.
Right.
And I've got a house of 10.
Yeah. That sucks.
So that was frustrating.
I hate those shows.
And because IP, you have to bring your own venue, right? So you are paying for a venue.
Mm-hmm.
And rent is not cheap.
Yeah.
I am out with registration and the rent I paid on the space, probably about $1,000. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I paid a lot of money for a handful of people to watch me experience my trauma all over again.
But those people got quality over quantity.
Oh, my God. The reception has been great. I cannot complain. I've powerful, insightful, just all of these incredible things said about my show.
Yeah, the reviews on your show are glowing.
Absolutely. Yeah. But
been part of a bunch of those shows where it's like, this is really, really good. I wish people were here to see it.
Yeah. Honestly, it's the $1,000 right now is kind of the kick in the nuts. I could really use that money.
Yeah.
I got bills to pay.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see what the final looks like. But also, most of the people that saw it were artists and staff and press comps. I don't think I'm walking away with
too much.
I think My guess is I'm 800 under. Hmm. That's my guess. Right. We'll find out when the checks start coming in.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Mm. But other than that, it was a great fringe.
Mm-hmm.
Shows went well.
Yeah.
I got to see some glorious shows. That's the thing. Like, all of the shows I saw this year were really good.
Mm.
There was not a turd among them.
Sure.
There was one that I didn't quite get, but it had some lovely dancing, so I kind of didn't care that I didn't get the story. I'm just like,
fair.
Well, that's pretty.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening, but God, that is graceful.
Yeah.
Like, also, that one had little kids, including this 4-year-old with the thickest glasses, and he was so cute. But yeah, everything else was just fucking amazing. It was a solid goddamn year for Fringe this year.
Yeah.
So.
Sweet. Yeah. I got to see a handful of shows on Saturday and Sunday. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And all of them were incredibly well worth it. I am a person who is very rarely motivated to give a standing ovation. Mm. I know that some people will just do them for everything. And then some people feel compelled when they see that others are doing them. One where I really felt deeply compelled to do that was a Choose Your Own Adventure with Turtle Boy.
Oh my God, that one was so good.
It was so far beyond anything that I expected or have seen. Not just good, not just great, but like full on jaw dropping, and so beautiful the way that he worked with the people in the audience and stuff. Just absolutely incredible.
Also, the puppeteer had exceptional shoulders.
He was
very
gorgeous.
Distracting.
Yeah. But also, the puppet work itself
incredible. It was a marionette that had probably about 15 different strings.
Yeah.
With the back detachy part that some of the fancier ones have.
Mm-hmm. But the storytelling and that kind of stuff was on par with the best shows that I've seen. And the audience work was fucking spectacular.
Yep.
But all of those things combined made it for me.
I will say my favorite one. I think, we can't list through all of them. But I will say the favorite one that I watched, or the one that I think got to me the most, was I Am the Silver Surfer, I Will Protect You.
Huh.
It was in the Thrust, and I walked in, and I had this reaction right away. I walk in, and there's a giant tarp all over the stage, and I'm like, did I walk into a dangerous production show? Is there going to be blood? Mm. There was no blood.
Oh.
It was...
That's the sequel to There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm. There was no blood.
Basically, the show starts, it's just a guy comes in from the back of the audience with a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
And he is aggressive. He's agitated. You can see that he's agitated.
Sure.
And he gets on stage and he's kind of talking to people a little bit. And at one point, somebody says something back at him, and he's like, like, it was very unsettling the way he came in and how he did it. And then he started talking about how Galactus is coming, but you don't see the Fantastic Four here anywhere. So it's up to the Silver Surfer. And I am the Silver Surfer. And then he goes into his backpack and he pulls out all this silver... he's taking his clothes off as he's talking about Galactus is coming. And so he takes off his shirt. He takes off his tank.
Mm-hmm.
He drops his pants. to boxer briefs.
Oh, boy.
And then he drops the boxer briefs really quickly, and he is in a silver fucking banana hammock.
There you go.
It was real good. And then he starts pulling out silver body paint and just slapping it on his body, covering himself while he's talking about his... And most of it is him going through his narrative with this. And as he's going through it, you're like, oh, he's crazy.
Oh.
He is going through psychosis on stage.
Oh.
Like, this man actively thinks he is the Silver Surfer. But he talks about certain elements that can happen in psychosis, like from the perspective of the person going through it, where things like, it's not my fault. This happened, but it was this other thing that made that happen. And sometimes it was something that may have been grounded slightly in reality, but more often it's the psychotic excuse that's used.
Yeah.
Because it couldn't be their fault. If it was their fault, then something would be broken or something like that, right? That kind of thing. And it was unsettling and heartbreaking all at the same time. The way he did it was so very well done. Goddamn. It was beautiful. And you do, at the end of it, see him have just this break where he's like, I'm not crazy, I'm not crazy, I'm not crazy. And just, oh, it was so good. He got a golden lanyard for it.
I mean,
Turtle Boy got a golden lanyard too, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one was the one that I thought was really good, but also exceptionally impactful and... just solid fucking work.
Yeah, I got to see a bunch of different stuff, and I did too.
Yeah, it was all good.
So good.
It was all so good this year. So yeah, we should probably, like, if we start talking more about Fringe, we're gonna just go through all the shows we saw.
Yeah.
So maybe another break.
Maybe another. All right. Another break.
We'll take a break.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, you should like us on Facebook. Apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter at AON Podcast, or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for Apropos of Nothing.
And we're back. I'm Salsa.
I'm James.
And I'm Jenna.
And it's time for a crazy fact from history.
Yay! Crazy fact from history.
All right.
Crazy
fact from history. There's this one. We'll see. It might be a little bit of a downer. But
Jesus.
Oh yeah. Okay. No, this is
like
gonna,
my friend show?
Yeah, no, this is gonna start out great. The man who coined the word eugenics.
Oh God.
Oof.
Yeah, we're off to a great start.
Oof.
The man who coined the word eugenics invented the dog whistle.
Fuck, that's funny. That's, oh, wow.
True story.
Okay.
Yep.
Huh.
Francis Galton.
Mm-hmm.
Many people might know that name. He was originator of eugenics. He was actually, though, like, a lot of people, eugenics, probably. He was a statistician. Like, his whole thing was he was a statistician. That was his whole deal.
Okay.
Eugenic, he kind of fell into it through statistics.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Classic pipeline.
Yeah, kind of. He was a cousin to Charles Darwin.
Okay.
But he wanted to measure things.
Huh.
And through measuring things, that's how he fell into eugenics. But he invented the dog whistle because he was testing hearing ranges.
Okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah. All right. That
and
makes
one
sense.
Of the byproducts of inventing this whistle that humans could no longer hear was that animals could.
Oh.
So, you know, but yeah, the joke writes itself.
Yeah, sure does.
He also invented the questionnaire.
I mean, honestly, all of these seem related.
Yep.
Yeah.
He devised the very first weather map.
Oh. Fascinating.
What else?
I mean, there's that statistician.
Yeah. He did a lot of things. Like, he was a very active person in science, and a lot of people, like, followed his science for various reasons. And yes, the eugenics thing is bad, but then you, like, he initiated meteorology.
Yeah.
Like, meteorology exists because of him as well.
Mm. Right.
So, like, I'm not excusing him by any means. I'm just saying that this guy was very multifaceted.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah, the guy who invented eugenics invented the dog whistle and meteorology. So, yeah, guy got around.
Fair enough.
Does anybody have any shout-outs they want to give?
I want to give a shout-out to several people. Everybody that helped me with the Social Butterfly Project. Mm-hmm. Angela Fox was my executive producer and incredibly helpful in everything. Rob Ward was the outreach director. He's the one that talked to a bunch of mental health organizations and got information for us to have available for people. And Melissa Karacher for the tech, CJ for front of house. Also, David Hellstrom for joining us with his show. And I would like to give a shout out to the Stages of MN for their glorious reviews and noted fringe blogger Matthew Everett.
Yeah.
For his glowing reviews of my work.
Excellent.
And everyone that came out to see my stuff.
Hell yeah.
Fantastic.
Oh, but that includes me.
Ah, gross. Oh, and also all of my storytellers.
Yeah.
There we
absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Didn't have to end on thanking James. Gross.
I'm going to make it worse. I'm going to thank James.
Oh, no.
Gross.
Yeah. No, he drove me and my brother-in-law to the airport, and he picked up four people at an ungodly hour from the airport. And for that, I am very appreciative, and thank you very much.
It was well worth it just to have you home and safe.
Indeed.
Aw.
Yeah.
James, if you don't thank yourself, I don't know what to do. Come on. Comedy comes in threes.
Do it.
I'm going to say thank you to everyone who was in the background of somebody else's play.
That includes James.
Include James?
And that can include
me. Okay. All right. Yeah, okay.
All right. Good.
But, yeah.
Any other thanks that you want to give or kudos?
Well, just... That also, like, very particularly includes, like, in Casa Bede Makaska.
I forgot I got to guest with that.
Somebody's... My night, it was Terry Foy.
That's glorious.
One of my metas, Jax's other partner, ended up being conscripted into that show on extraordinarily short notice. It is his first stage show ever.
Mm-hmm. Ever, yep.
And his first lines on stage for a show. And just, like, a crazy number of things. His first fringe.
Yeah.
And
he fucking nailed it.
And he did an absolutely outstanding job, because the person who was supposed to play that role became injured and couldn't do it anymore. So great job. A lot of people moved heaven and earth in order to make other people's visions come true, and I know how hard it was for me, and I know that a lot of other people put even more work into it, and I congratulate them. Yeah.
All right. Does anybody have anything to plug?
Come see me at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. I'll fight you.
Come see me at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. I'll stab myself.
Come see me at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Jenna will fight you.
Correct.
I'll fight James. Does anybody have any final thoughts?
Bye, bye. I love you. Bye, bye.
In that case, thank you so very much to everybody who listens to this podcast. On behalf of myself and James and Jenna, eat the fucking cake.
Come here, my rubber orangutan. Let me feel your nipples.